Support for this podcast comes from Frito-Lay and the 2023 Snack Bracket Championship. The Frito-Lay Snacker Challenge is underway, and fans are voting on their favorite snacks to crown champion. We're talking about primetime matchups between the best 64 snacks in the land. Will Ruffles Ridges reign supreme? Can Doritos defend their dynasty? Or will Smart Food use their smarts for a surprise upset? Only you can decide. Get in on all the action for a chance to win up to $1,000 or a year's worth of snacks. Let your snacks be heard. Just go to FritoLaySnackIt.SBNation.com to vote and enter for a chance to win. No purchase necessary. Sweepstakes ends April 3rd, 2023. Void where prohibited. Year's worth of snacks awarded in the form of 52 coupons, each good for one bag of chips. See official rules at FritoLaySnackIt.SBNation.com.
Hi there, Duke fans. Welcome to episode 391 of the Duke Basketball Report podcast. We did not think we'd be doing this today. The Blue Devils have a basketball game, a very important basketball game, against the Wake Forest Demon Deacons in Cameron in, I don't know, like 4 hours or so. and really, that should be where our focus is. But instead, we are here to talk about some pretty significant news that dropped today about the Duke program and specifically about Coach K. And we're going to do that. You may be listening to this after the Wake game. If so, I apologize. We will have an extensive recap of that game coming at you very, very soon. But for now, we did want to focus on the news that Ian O'Connor of the New York Post, a very successful, very well-known writer of sports biographies, is coming out with a book. It will be released next week, a week from today. And it's about Coach K. In fact, the title of it is, I got to find it in my notes. What's the title? The title is
Donald and I are not helping on this.
I have so many notes. Okay. The title is Coach K, The Rise and Reign of Mike Krzyzewski. It is 384 pages long. Like I said, due out February 22nd. And by the way, Ian O'Connor is this dude knows what he's doing when it comes to writing biographies. He wrote The Captain, which is about Derek Jeter. He wrote a book about Bill Belichick being the greatest coach in the NFL. He wrote a great book about the rivalry between Arnold Palmer and Jack Nicklaus in golf. Ian O'Connor is not a nobody. And he spoke to some 250 people. He did not speak to Coach K. He did not speak to Tommy Amaker. He did not speak to John Shire, but he spoke to 250 people who are in some way close to and connected to Coach K to write this book. So this is not him just making stuff up out of no place. And guys, let's get to the headline. The thing that has blown up everybody's phones, our Twitter feeds, everywhere out there, is Ian O'Connor says that Duke wanted to hire Tommy Amaker as Coach K's replacement. In fact, it goes so far as to say that Tommy Amaker was offered the job, but that Coach K then called up Tommy and said to him, don't take it. You're not the right man for this. You would have to do, you know, you'd have to come here for a year and sit on the bench as an assistant coach. You don't want to do that. You'd have to move your family. Don't take this. John Shire's the right guy for the job. And that Tommy Amaker, Coach K essentially talked Tommy Amaker out of the job. And Tommy Amaker was very upset and distraught, and that Tommy Amaker turned it down, and that's how John Shire got the job. And in fact, it's been insinuated that Coach K did all this because he thought he could control John Shire and that he would be able to keep control over the program better than if Tommy Amaker came in. All right, dudes, tons to unpack there. And there's a lot more about this book that we want to talk about. Donald, I'll go to you first. Can I just ask this question? Does that story hold water with you? Do you think that's accurate?
No, and here's why. We actually talked
about...
Wait,
you said no. I'll move on to Sam then. No, I'm kidding.
No, but I mean, when you think about it, we actually have talked about that conversation that Coach K had with Tommy Amaker. We talked about it on this show, episode 323, if you want to go back. We talk about the Brendan Marks article that came out last summer right after Coach K announced his retirement that detailed this whole conversation. Obviously, it doesn't insinuate in that article that Tommy Amaker was told not to take the job. It was said that he was a finalist for the job and that he spoke with Coach K about it. But the whole talk about, yes, you would have to come in and be a coach in waiting. Do you want to leave Harvard to do that? Yes, you would be on the staff with John Shire. Do you want to do that? Yes, we would have to then demote Nolan Smith, who had just become an assistant coach a couple months prior, we would have to demote him back to another role for you to take the assistant job position. Now, do you want to do that? All those things led to that conversation part happened. What I don't think happened is that he was offered the job and then Coach K said, you shouldn't take this. You can't take it. Turn it down. And Amaker saying, okay, I'll do it. I don't think that happened. I think that part is a little bit, but here's the thing that, you know, before we go further,
Donald,
I think we have to
hang on.
Wait, this whole thing is just made up. That's not what I'm saying. I'm saying that there are a lot of sides to this. He said he spoke to 250 people for this book. There's two people he didn't speak to, Coach K and Tommy Amaker. So the fact that all these people know what went on in a private conversation with Tommy Amaker and Coach K, I don't think that holds water. It just doesn't sit right with me, especially given that he's presenting it as newfound evidence and the media is taking it as newfound evidence. When we learned about the conversation last summer, and we learned about it in almost its entirety, 90% of what has been alleged in this book is already been alleged, or at least having a conversation part. Yes, we think that happened. I don't think that Coach K really told Tommy Amaker, you can't come here, because I think if that was the case, I feel like the committee would have known that long before any offer or any finalist took place. I just think that.
Yeah. So Sam, I want to let you get in, but I just want to say really quickly, I agree with Donald that almost everything I've read today about this book, I'm like, yeah, I already knew that. The only thing that's new is this notion that Tommy Amaker had been offered the job, that Duke wanted Tommy Amaker, and that Coach K then talked him out of it and threw the kibosh on that. And that's what I agree. I find that part implausible. Sam, your turn.
I mean, given the biography that Jason just gave on the writer here, Ian O'Connor, I don't think he's inclined to just make up a story. And it sounds like, you know, you could have interpreted the conversation between Mike Krzyzewski and Tommy Amaker in different ways. I guess the person that I'm most curious to hear from then is Tommy Amaker, because prior to the story coming out about Coach K is retiring, they've selected John Shire to replace him, and that whole process like took a couple of weeks of everybody being, you know, under the cone of silence. The backdrop to that relative to Tommy Amaker that we've always heard is that Tommy Amaker is very happy at Harvard. He has had opportunities to leave Harvard to get back into Power Five, but that he's got sort of a good situation going up here in Cambridge, and that he's cool with that. His wife is a professor at the university. He's got this very well connected network now, and so why would he want to jump back into the into the buzzsaw that is ACC basketball? So that's the part that I feel like we would want to ask Tommy Amaker about, you know, to clarify here. And like, does he really feel like this was his job, and then he got basically told that he wasn't going to take it? When I read that story, the part that makes me uncomfortable is the question about how much Coach K is sort of putting his thumb on the scale as far as picking the replacement and continuing to run the program when he leaves. I completely understand why you would want to have the incoming head coach be an assistant the year before, because recruiting now happens on like a 6-month cycle pretty much. And so if you don't have next year's head coach already on the bench, you basically can't recruit. And it's not just that you can't recruit the players who are in high school, you can't recruit the transfers, and you can't recruit, let's admit it, the players who are currently on your team. So I totally understand the philosophy here. What I'm worried about is the degree to which Coach K was, you know, testing the boundaries here, and the extent to which he is going to continue to be kind of the shadow CEO of the program even after he retires. That's what I'm kind of nervous about. And I don't say that from the, like, I don't think Coach K is some, you know, I said shadow CEO. I don't think of him as some like shadowy New World Order operative, you know, trying to pull all the strings and creating grand conspiracy theories or anything about this. I just think that if you're the head coach, you're the head coach and you're running the program, it's your program. And if Coach K is still sort of standing in the background and pointing out everything John Shire is doing, I am not going to love that setup. He already said he's not going to come to the games. And I was prepared to analyze, like, all right, where is Coach K sitting at the games? How close is he to the bench? How much could anybody hear him if he starts shouting instructions or shouting at the referees or yada, yada, yada. Like he could exert as much power as he wanted on this program, given all he's done for Duke and all he's done for the men's basketball program. And I don't think many people would stand in his way. He's very powerful in that regard. And I think what the program has to be really conscious of next year and then you know in subsequent years is how much is Coach K really still running this place and how much is it just we're working to honor his legacy and be the best program that we can.
So Sam, I think that part about what happens when he becomes Coach Emeritus, if you want to say, I think those you've brought up those concerns on previous shows, and I think we were going to have a longer discussion by the summer, and I think we still will, but I think that part is valid. But I also know that in the years after Dean Smith retired from UNC, Coach K was very either behind the scenes or public is very well known his resistance to what Dean Smith was doing with that program and basically being the rubber stamp and saying, whatever I say goes. He brought in Bill Guthridge, Matt Doherty. Basically, he joked, but he in seriousness said, Dean Smith hired me, not UNC. Like those sort of things where I think Coach K is not going to be doing that. But I still think, as you mentioned, he has a lot of influence, but I don't think he is going to start out his post-coaching career by being, you know, the mysterious finger on the button in the room overlooking and Schwartz Butters overlooking Kville and kind of just having the monitor at all times and kind of saying, what are we doing over here? I don't think that's going to happen. But again, I think that's a conversation we can have much, much later once this transition does take place.
So Sam, I want to be clear about something. When I voiced my disbelief at this aspect, the fact that Amaker was offered the job that Coach K, you know, sort of talked him out of it. I'm not saying that I believe that Ian O'Connor made that up. I think that there probably were sources that Ian O'Connor had that thought things were happening that maybe weren't happening, or that Ian O'Connor misinterpreted what he spoke to some different people about. And Sam, you know, you sort of alluded to this. There's going to be a press conference after the Wake Forest game tonight. Coach K will discuss things with the media, and I guarantee you someone will ask what's going on with this story.
And that someone won't be us.
Yeah, it will not be us, right? I will not be asking that question. It's going to be very interesting to see how Coach K responds to it and what he says, because even though the book is about a lot more, that's going to be the question that's asked. You know, did you undermine the committee, Coach K? And the last thing I do want to say, and then I'll let you guys jump back in. I'm the reason I'm concerned about this, and one of the reasons I think we're on a call right now discussing this, and one of the reasons I think this matters, is I think all this serves to undermine John Shire just a little bit. It makes it look like John Shire wasn't the choice for Duke University. It makes it look like John Shire is Coach K's puppet, you know, or that Coach K is secretly controlling things. It makes it look like John Shire maybe didn't deserve the job, that someone else should have gotten it first. And I don't like any of those things, because everything we've seen so far is that John Shire does deserve this job. And John Shire's done a great job so far with the transition. And I think there's a great chance that John Shire is going to be fabulously successful. So I hate that this is going to cloud, you know, his early days on the job.
And honestly, like, John Shire has earned it. I mean, just the recruiting class that he's built without literally coaching a practice yet. Like, he's doing that on his own. I will say this, the last thing I have to say about this for right now, Tommy Amaker is what we call a grown-ass man. That man is 56 years old. If you think that Tommy Amaker is turning down the biggest job he could ever get in his entire life at age 56 because someone told him not to, like, that is not the case. He probably in the end decided it was not best for him to leave Harvard or for whatever situation. But I am not going to believe that a 56-year-old man was told, yo, you can't take this. And he just went there and said, nope, okay, that's fine. I won't do it. That man has a family. That man has a career that he has built on his own too. And I think that he has earned the right to take this job if he was offered the position, just like anybody else. But I do not think he turned it down because someone told him not to.
To my earlier point, though, like, I can completely envision this. Like, if Coach K really wanted this to be this way, he absolutely has the power to poison the whole well here.
Wouldn't if Coach K really wanted it to be Shire, not Amaker, would Coach K have let the process reach the point where Amaker was offered the job? That's what I find unbelievable. If Coach K really wanted this, he would have stopped it.
And that's the confusing thing. And the part that, like, look, we're just never going to get that knowledge about how the whole, like, the process happened. I know Brendan Marks wrote the whole story about it. But you know, it's always a little after the fact. We're not going to see everybody's emails that, you know, Coach K sent to Nina King and that Nina King sent to John Jackson. Like, all of that level of detail is lost to history. No one's going to know that. So I don't know, maybe, you know, I don't want to speculate too much. It is possible that Coach K said, yes, athletic department, go run the search, do whatever process is laid out. Nina King, this is not the first time that you've hired a coach and you sort of know how this works, just go do it. And then as it gets down to it, he reaches into his feelings and realizes what he really wants as far as his succession plan goes. Maybe on specifically on the personnel, maybe on the process, what have you. So I don't know that it's impossible. Ian O'Connor then sat for an interview with Brendan Marks that came out just a few minutes ago that had, I think the tone of which was, look, in Ian O'Connor's words, look, I admire Coach K. He's obviously one of the greatest coaches in American sports history. And he's earned a lot of leeway in terms of the legacy that he's leaving. And the book is not meant, I think that the way the news came out today, it sort of read like, the book is meant, because this was like the story that everyone highlighted and that the New York Post wrote about, was like, oh, well, this is going to be like a hit piece on Mike Krzyzewski. That is not the case. The book, as far as like the summary that I've read, is not a hit piece on Mike Krzyzewski. It highlights the good and the bad from his career. And there are bad points in his career. There's a lot of evidence that, like, he doesn't have the nicest mouth. He is capable of saying mean things to people. He obviously played and coached under Bob Knight. It is not like he has, you know, the rosiest approach here. So we all know that. We have known that for a long time. How much he did that in this specific instance, I think is something that we will probably just keep speculating about into the future. As far as like the health of the program and the people involved here, what I hope is that Tommy Amaker and that John Shire and that the assistants who are still there and will continue to be there next year feel like they're all empowered to do their jobs correctly, and that no one was sort of cheated out of an opportunity or a promotion that they thought that they deserved. And hopefully that is all on the up and up. Maybe we'll get to talk to Tommy Amaker about this at some point. Maybe we'll get to talk to John Shire about this at some point. But the story is fascinating either way.
Yeah. And by the way, Sam, I'm really glad you pointed that out. I had in my notes, one of the things I wanted to say was that the Brendan Marks article with Ian O'Connor, folks, go to The Athletic, get your Athletic subscription, read what Brendan Marks had to say, because he makes it very clear that this book, everyone's talking about the succession story, but the book is about so, so much more. The book starts out with a lengthy anecdote about Coach K's close relationship with a guy that he coached at Army. It's not even only about Coach K at Duke. It's about Coach K at Army. It's about Coach K's relationship with Bobby Knight. There's a ton of stuff about his relationship with Bobby Knight. It's about his entire career, everything that it took to make him the GOAT, the greatest of all time. Talks a lot about 1995 when Mickey Krzyzewski stepped in and forced Coach K to take time off because Coach K was literally going to kill himself. Ian O'Connor had started working on this book before Coach K announced his retirement. That's important to note here. This is not a book that's hastily put together as Coach K is retiring. It's a book that's been in the process by a great sports biographer for a very, very, very long time. And so it is a pity that the New York Post and other folks who are writing headlines today are latching onto this one thing that looks nefarious and tricky and all this other kind of stuff, because that's not what the book is at all. I think it's a book that Duke fans will probably really enjoy.
Oh, we know why they're doing it, though.
Clicks.
They're trying to sell a newspaper.
You got to generate
clicks,
the hype.
Try and get clicks. Yeah.
And
that's what it is.
There is going to be a lot of Coach K content coming out over the next few months. Like, we're just going to keep talking about him, and maybe we'll decide to do our own retrospective, but everyone is going to be doing a Coach K thing in the next few months. So you gotta get the people interested in your take.
Absolutely. And they're making it where this is going to be, again, this is the story. Jason, you mentioned how it kind of undermines John Shire, and I agree with you there. It also undermines kind of this season.
like this season was supposed to be about Coach K's final ride. That's not, you know, his final. And now people are like, well, is this really his final ride, or is he just going to be coached again next year just from an office somewhere deep in the bowels of Duke University? I think that does a disservice to the players that are on this team as well. It does a disservice to the coaching staff, and it does a disservice to Tommy Amaker as well, because I'm sure Tommy Amaker is sitting there like, why am I in it? Like, why not? Like, why y'all putting my name in the street? He was out there doing his job, and now he's like front page on the New York Post because of some conversation that allegedly happened. I think that's unfair for everybody.
Yeah. So with that, we're going to put this story behind us for the moment. We actually have some more news we want to talk about. We're going to take a quick break. But when we come back, the schedule, next year's schedule, we're getting some details, and it's really exciting. That story coming up. All right, guys, we're back from the break. By the way, you know what I realized, gentlemen? I realized we never introduced ourselves at the beginning. Like, I was so into this. I was like, I never said, I'm Jason, he's Donald, he's Sam. Not that we need to after 391 podcasts.
Jason, yeah, I use the word allegedly. Like, everyone knows that's Donald. I'm the lawyer here. Allegedly, yes. That's less lawyer talk. That's me.
So we are Jason, Sam, and Donald, and we're here to preview next season's schedule. Seems crazy to be talking about that right now, but Duke announced today that they are taking part next year in the Phil Knight Legacy event. Phil Knight, of course, the multi-billionaire who founded and built Nike into the behemoth that it is. A couple years ago, they had one of these events where they got 16 different top-tier teams, all of them Nike-sponsored teams. They broke them out into 2 8-team brackets, and it was a really great tournament. Folks, you may recall that it's a tournament that ended with Duke. I think Duke had 3 comeback wins. We beat Florida in the championship game. Like, we were down in every game, and we just came back out of nowhere and destroyed these teams. It was a lot of fun. So Duke is in this tournament again on one side. You know, they're, like I said, they're 2 8-team brackets. Duke's bracket consists of, are you ready for it? It's a really good bracket. Here are the teams that Duke will be playing in the Phil Knight Legacy event: Florida, Oregon State, Portland State, Purdue, West Virginia, Xavier, and Gonzaga. Duke and Gonzaga heading up this bracket. That's going to be a huge deal next year. Really exciting. By the way, the tournament also features a women's bracket. There'll be 4 women's team competing: Duke, UConn, Iowa, and Oregon State, which is really cool for our Duke women. Getting to play UConn is always special. And by the way, I mentioned there are 16 teams. The other side, now Duke will never play any of these teams, but the other side of the thing, the Phil Knight Invitational, is Alabama, Iowa State, Michigan State, UNC, Oregon, Portland, UConn, and Villanova. How did 2 Big East teams get in the same bracket? UConn and Villanova, they could conceivably play each other in that tournament, which is kind of weird for a preseason tournament. But anyway, the exciting thing is, you know, potentially if they make it there, Duke, Gonzaga again next year, potentially games with Florida, Purdue. Purdue, by the way, could be a top 5 team again next year if some guys come back. West Virginia. I mean, this is really exciting. This is Thanksgiving weekend in Portland. Donald, have you got your tickets yet?
I have not, but I think this is a very intriguing thing. I will say, I know we'll talk about the men, but I want to start with the women because, first of all, I think this is a huge, huge accomplishment for Kara Lawson and her team to be recognized by being a part of this tournament especially alongside Connecticut. I think everyone wants to play UConn. They're the gold standard of women's basketball, even in recent years, as they've kind of declined somewhat. But I think when it comes to Duke women, they have a great shot to really introduce themselves to the national stage. They've had a couple of opportunities this year playing South Carolina, and they featured fairly well, even if they did lose. But this is a tournament that's going to have a lot of eyeballs in it, particularly on the men's and women's side. And because UConn's in it, there'll be even more eyeballs from the women's side of things. So I think this is a huge, huge accomplishment to be a part of this field. I'm really glad that both the Duke men and the Duke women will be a part of this.
I'm really excited to see Duke playing in this tournament against the likes of Gonzaga. I think that the field is a lot of fun for Duke. It's not just that Gonzaga is there. Purdue, who is one of the best teams in the country this season, Florida, who's been very good in recent years, Xavier, West Virginia, these are all big names in college basketball. And the other side is nothing to sneeze at either. It's not, you know, it's North Carolina, but it's Villanova. It's a number of other great programs. So I don't know how interesting it is that Duke got selected for this. Duke is if not the most prominent Nike program, right? If it's not North Carolina, it's Duke. And so it's pretty cool that Duke keeps getting invited to this. I need to look at if I can. I didn't make it to Vegas this year. I didn't make it to Madison Square Garden this year. I feel terrible about both of those decisions. So maybe I can figure out how to make it out to Portland for Thanksgiving next year.
I'm going to figure out a way. My issue is that is literally right when the World Cup starts. It is also right around the time I turned 40. So my present to myself was going to the World Cup. Come on, US, please qualify. But if I can figure out a way to make a stop in Portland on the way there or on the way back for this tournament, I will do so.
Only Donald, who lives on the East Coast, would think of stopping in Portland on his way to the Middle East.
Hey, you got to get those frequent flyer miles.
It's just out of the way.
Just a little bit.
Hey guys. So I'm going to wrap it up with this. I saw a great thing on Twitter today, and I think I want both of you to turn your mics on because I want to capture your reaction. Today is a special anniversary.
Microphone is on.
Your microphone is on. Good. Today is a special anniversary. 19 years ago today in 2003, Donte Jones committed murder on a basketball court. 19 years ago today, he destroyed Nick Vanderland of Virginia in a basketball game and then did push-ups to celebrate the fact that he had committed murder. Guys, yep. I mean, like, greatest plays in Duke history. This is up there, isn't it?
This is top three for me, and it ain't three.
I was going to say, Donald needs to talk about this first because this is salient for him.
Oh, yeah. I mean, this play, I remember being in the dorm watching this game. I remember the next day, everybody, honestly, that night, everyone just, you know, having adult beverages and doing push-ups. I think we are the most fit campus that Duke has ever seen in celebrating and mimicking that celebration for months to come. And literally every time Donte did a dunk the rest of the year, everyone in the crowd would just kind of be like fake doing push-ups in the stands, because that was, again, 19 years ago, and it's still one of those things that everyone knows that dunk, everyone remembers that dunk, and everyone will never forget it.
The push-up clip is in standard def, so you know that it's old, unfortunately. But I have like a vague memory of it. I'm in high school at this point, so the memories are not as seared in for me as they became once I was in college and once I was like seeing most of these games in person. But man, does that highlight get you hyped up? It shows up in every highlight package that the program puts together, no matter how far back they're going with those videos. So I love that.
It's the push-ups that make it. I mean, like, it's a great dunk. You see great dunks all the time. But the fact that he lands and immediately goes into the push-ups.
Don't forget, this is also before Duke was like cool, right? Duke's brand as a basketball program has really changed over the last, like, 10, 12 years, like, pretty much since Kyrie Irving showed up.
Yeah.
This is still when Duke are, like, firmly the nerds. And Donte Jones was just not that.
No. Also, with regards to this dunk, just in the scheme of college basketball, there are a few dunks that I've ever seen that are more disrespectful than this. Like, he did push-ups over a man's body. I mean, there is Strong Kemp doing the point. That's easily most disrespectful of all time. I also link up there Shaq dunking on Chris Dudley and just casually just throwing him like 3 feet into the stands.
Yeah, Shaq was good at that. Was good. Ragdoll.
Not a dunk, but Iverson's step over. Over Tyronn Lue, and also Scottie Pippen dunking.
Wait, Dikembe Mutombo's finger wag when he blocks a shot is pretty disrespectful.
Yeah, but I mean, but he used to do that to the crowd for the most part. It was more like entertainment. But this is like, yo, I dunked in your face. Like Scottie Pippen dunking over Patrick Ewing and then literally walking over him. That is disrespectful. But after those things, Donte Jones is easily one of the most disrespectful dunks I've ever seen in my life. Probably the most disrespectful I've seen in college. And the fact that he didn't get a technical is as big as accomplishment.
That's incredible. By the way, I was just going to say that. The fact that he did that and did not get... he would have been tossed out of the game if it was modern.
He would have been tossed twice in this day and age.
Yeah. It would have been just ugly. Guys, Donald, Sam, thank you for joining me. Everybody else out there, thanks for joining us. Episode 391. Go Blue Devils, beat Wake Forest tonight. Or if you're listening to this tomorrow, beat Wake Forest last night, whatever the heck it may be. For Donald and Sam, I am Jason, and here's the Duke Band to play us out and take us home. So here's the goal. We're going to go through this, and because I'm not going to have a lot of time to edit, but I want to edit when we're done. I'll host. No mess ups. If you mess up, if you cough, hiccup, whatever, shit's going in there.
It's fine.
You ready, Sam?
Let's do it.
All right.